Ready? Hi, everybody. My name's Samantha. I'm an alcoholic. If you would please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'll read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. There may be some of you who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. If so, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published or broadcast reports of our meetings, as well as through social networking. Please do not check in. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help others. Our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. At this time, we ask that cell phones and all electronic devices be turned off or at the least set to silent or vibrate. Thank you. This meeting workshop of AALA is being hosted by me, I guess, Samantha Lavin, from the Women's Self-Acceptance Group at 5 o'clock on Saturday. We will be representing our group with standard format. There will be no Seventh Tradition basket at this meeting workshop. And, okay, welcome. The title of this workshop is We Had to Get Down to Causes and Conditions, Step 4. The following reading is from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've asked Amy to read the 12 steps, please.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Amy.
12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our home. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. Our speaker will share for approximately 10 to 15 minutes, after which the meeting will be open for questions. Please keep in mind that this is not a sharing meeting, but one in which questions may be asked of the speaker relating to the topic of the workshop. Because the workshop is being recorded, I'll restate your question when you say it. If you wish to share in a general way, you can avail yourself to the marathon meetings that are also going on here. In Parlor 131. Okay. I would now like to introduce our workshop speaker, Candace.
Hi, you guys.
Hi.
So my name is Candace Moore. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Candace.
And I got a lot of friends here today. Want to say hi, and good to see you. So Sam is also going to share just for a few minutes after I'm done because I asked her to give a little bit of her experience. I'm really appreciative that she took her time to come and be a service, and I really appreciate all you guys being here. I just want to get some stats out of the way because I always do. It's important that I hear myself say it. My sobriety date is August 16, 1995, and it's the only date I've ever had, and the reason that it's been my only date is because I have continued to avail myself to the information in our basic text, Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I have continued to be willing under strong sponsorship to uncover, discover, and discard that which is blocking me so that I can do what? Get free, right? So that's why we're here. We need to get down to what? Causes and conditions. That's right. I'm excited already. And the second thing is my sponsor. My sponsor is Clancy. He is someone that I'm accountable to. And I just have a hint of fear about him. And you know what? That's good because I'm arrogant, I'm cocky, I am overconfident, and I need someone that I'm accountable to. My disease will tell me, you know this book, You've been sober consistently long enough, you can slack off a little bit, right? I can tell you that I am tightly wound. There are people that are very even keeled. They are just, they love one and they celebrate all, and I think you're suspect, you know? And so, and that's my truth. And one of the freedoms of staying here and doing a thorough inventory is I get to identify my truth, not your truth. Not what I want you to look like, act like, what I need your belief system to be, but I need to uncover what my core belief system about me is. And when I make peace with that, then I can embrace you, right? So Clancy is my sponsor. He's been my sponsor since I was 9 years sober. My former sponsor, Gloria Decker, was the love of my life, and she taught me what it was to be a woman of dignity. And I try and pass that down to the women I sponsor and to the men I sponsor, men of dignity. Stop it. And then the last thing is my home group. It's the Arlington group. It is the oldest meeting in Southern California. We just celebrated our 69th AA birthday. And so it's just a speaker meeting, 8 to 9, simple, solid message of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. All right, so I just want to read to you just a little bit. On page 63, it says, this is right before we take the third step prayer, which we're going to take today before I launch into a fourth step talk, right? It says, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, that's huge. As we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. The reason I wanted to read that in particular is because I came to you saturated with filth and with shame, right? As a direct result of what I had done out there as an alcoholic woman. And I'm talking about before I took my act on the road and got into the public relations realm of my disease. Before I even got to that stage, right, where there was a price tag on my time, and I don't do discounts, right, before I got to that stage, I already had behaviors that had me afraid of who I was. Not afraid of who you were, but my behaviors had me afraid of who I was. So when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, there had been an accumulation of a lot of stuff. And this stuff, if not looked at honestly, will cause me to get thirsty. And one more time, I'm going to have to go back out there because I can't find the solution in you. I can put the cutest woman on my arm. She can have a pocket full of money, because that used to be the criteria. We're going to talk about that a little bit in the sex inventory, right? That used to be the criteria before I started to understand my worth, my value, and that I was able to have the life I wanted if I was willing to tap into a power greater than myself. So when it says I am reborn, it doesn't matter what my mom has done. It doesn't matter what my dad has done. It doesn't matter all the things that I did out there on the streets to get what I had to have. A drink to make it all go away. It says, I am reborn. What does that mean? It means I am made anew. This isn't just something that's in the book. This is something that had to go in my head. It had to swirl around, and then it had to begin to make its journey down to my gut in my womb where I live. That's where all my decisions are made. They are made from my womb. So at this time, if you wouldn't mind, if we could just take a moment. And we're going to say the third step prayer together, because today we are healing. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. All right, so it's on and popping now. So then, after we take a third step, what do? We launch into a course of vigorous action. I hurl myself into a course of vigorous action because now that I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, I can't wait to get free. It's like I've been walking around and every night I'm sleeping with a dirty blanket. You know what I mean? It's an odor to it. I don't like it, but it's the only thing I think I have that's going to keep me warm. Now I can't wait. I've just taken a shower. Get this blanket off of me. Let's get some freshly laundered things, if you will. And so we're gonna launch into this course. And it says, right, because they know how we are. I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It meets me where I am, and then it elevates me, right? It says, and I'm going to read this first person because that's how I go through this book. And it says, though my decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of. Not just look at it, but get rid of it. Like I can be with someone, it's not a healthy relationship. I see them for what they are, but I'm not ready to let it go. Right? About to take it to the choir, right. So not only now am I willing to face it, but I also want it gone. You have to go now. You don't fit in my life anymore. I appreciate the time we've had together, the good, the bad, the painful, the erotic. The erotic doesn't have to go, but the rest of it has to go. That's my truth. Y'all don't know nothing about that. Okay, so it says that I have to get rid of the things in me that's been blocking me. From what? From freedom. Because that's what all this is about, right? My liquor was but a symptom, so I've got to get down to causes and conditions. So what do? I start upon this journey, and it says that an inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. I don't do well with people who won't talk to me in facts. When I ask a question that's yes or no, they say, well, no, 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 sugar, come on now. Yes or no. We'll see what happens. No. So here's the deal. I'm presenting an image to you, but it's not factual. It's what I'd like to have happen in the future. It's what I'm working on. But in the meantime, that's great, and I support that. I support anyone's dreams and visions. Yes, I do. But I need to know what the facts are because then I can make decisions that are a bit healthier than the ones that have been made in the past, right? And so it says it is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. Always be clear when going through this book that the stock in trade is you. I am the stock in trade. This is personal. This is Candace's life on the line right now, right? And so it says one object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. That is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. That's how I felt when I got sober almost 17 years ago. I felt damaged and of no use. And it didn't matter how cute I dressed. It didn't matter who I was dating, but the core belief I had about me was that I was damaged and of no use. So I could only hope to dazzle you for a short period of time. But then behaviors are going to kick in because my true belief system about who I am is that I am inferior to everyone around me. Doesn't matter what money I'm pulling down. Doesn't matter the title I hold, because we get confused. Well, let me get another promotion, and then I'll be okay. Not if I still feel damaged. That's a personal deal, right? That's the things you can't talk about over lunch with your coworkers. And so, because it says, if I am to be successful, I can't fool myself about my values. I've done that long enough. I don't even want to fool myself anymore. I want to find out the beauty, because certain people have said, you know, oh my gosh, you have these great attributes. And I say, oh, thank you, but I can't hear you. It's not resonating in my gut. So now I've got to make peace. I've got to uncover what those are for Candace, right? Let's celebrate. Okay. So we're going to talk about the sex and the fear inventory today. Specifically, the reason we're not doing, Samantha said that she wanted to share in the resentment inventory, right? Because she has just had another recent fabulous experience, you know what I mean? So she's a little tender now, a little tender. I want y'all to love her after this is done. And the reason, you know, when I was talking to the committee about what I wanted to do, I said the fear and the sex, because you never hear about those. You never hear. Every time I'm in a meeting, I hear a speaker, and then I did the resentment inventory, and I checked my clients, I got free. Really? Oh, okay. All right. Well, I have a lot of fears, and I'm so glad that this book, who knows me, it's like a diary. This book is my diary, right? I'm so glad it's going to bring me into the light. But it starts to talk to me about the fear. So on page 68, it says that I reviewed my fears thoroughly. Now, I want to share with you, when I was newly sober and I did a fear inventory, it was very different than after I had been sober for a while and did another fear inventory. Because when I was newly sober, I blamed a lot of things on alcohol and anything I used to complement alcohol, right? After I had been sober for a while, had had my heart broken, had lost some jobs, had left some jobs, you know, and after I had some experience, more experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to take a different look at my fears and what was driving them. So it says that I put them on paper, even though I have no resentment in connection with them. And so what's important about that is when you're doing a four-step, a resentment inventory, right, it at column four is going to ask you who you were, where have you been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened. So that fear is in direct relation to your inventory. Now we're not talking about being pissed off. We're talking about just straight being afraid. I am afraid. Why am I afraid to come out of my house? Why am I afraid to get into a long-term relationship? Why am I afraid to seek a higher position at the company I work with? Like, what are these fears? What do I really feel about myself? Let me share something that happened with you. I was watching TV last night. What was I watching? Someone, she was pregnant, and the husband was all excited, and they were planning whatever you do when you're pregnant. You know what I mean? And so the thing is, I have a child. I gave birth to a child, but I've never been her mom because I was under the lash of alcohol. So when I had my daughter, I was loaded. So loaded they couldn't give me an epidural. Right? So when I held her, there were no people coming to the hospital with gifts and cards and pretty little things. There was just me having come off a run with this child in my hand. And the reason I share that with you is, had I not done an inventory, had I not been on this path, when I saw that last night, it would have taken me to a place of shame. It would have taken me to a place of regret. Now, you won't know this about me because I just shared it. But if we're talking, I'm bringing all of that to the table. Until I do an inventory, every fear, every heartbreak, every disillusionment is the only thing I can bring to the table. It's got to be healed because I'm reborn. Right? So I'm shedding off. I'm taking off all my dirty clothes now. That's what we're doing. So when I start looking at my fears, I'll share with you, you know, one of my biggest fears is of getting drunk. I don't want to get drunk again. I'm not a high bottom drunk. I don't hold a job. I hold a job. You know what I mean? But Uncle Sam's not taking taxes out of it. And that job takes my dignity and threatens my life. Right? I'm afraid of being homeless because as an alcoholic woman, I was homeless prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. So those are always going to be two fears. And so that means I want to guard my sobriety so that I don't get drunk. You know what I mean? So there are solutions to all this. I really love that there are solutions. They didn't give me water. What kind of committee is that? So I'm parched. Anywho, so it says that I take my fears, I put them on paper, I ask myself why I had them. Isn't it because self-reliance has failed me? That's what this all comes down to. This is step one all over again. I'm not willing to admit that I can't handle this. I'm not willing to admit that this has got a hold of me. So as long as I continue to want to be the Alpha and the Omega, I'm also going to continue to be under the lash of fear. It's going to be a driving force in my life. So it says self-reliance is good as far as it went, but it didn't go, this is why I adore you, Deborah. Deborah is just wonderful.
Thank you.
Here you are. Thank you. So self-reliance is okay. It's all right. But it doesn't solve the fear problem, right? And so when it's cocky, it made it worse. So here's what happened. I recently had to do a fear inventory because some things have happened within the organization I work for. I had some plans, and they have been temporarily affected while all this is being sorted out. And every night I was losing sleep. My dear friend Aquila knows because we have had many conversations about this. I was losing sleep. I was angry. I'm bringing that hostility to my colleagues. You know, and I don't have the right to poison anyone else's mind about something because I haven't come to a place of peace with it, right? And so when I did this fear inventory, it started opening up all these other things. I was afraid that I would never have the house that I wanted. I didn't even know that I wanted a home. I didn't know that I was worthy of a home, right? This is what was revealed to me in the fear inventory. When I went through my breakup with my former partner, what was revealed to me in that relationship, in which we were both unfaithful, we were both incredibly violent with each other, the police frequently visited our home. When I went through that fear inventory, what I started putting on paper is that I felt damaged. And at the time, I was 9 years sober. After having done the steps, that's a sex thing over there. But let me tell you something. If they don't do this right here, the next workshop is going to be them crying about the sex. So that's all right. Let them celebrate. They'll be here in a minute. So when I started, after I went through the breakup, I had to look at, I felt damaged. At 9 years sober, having done the work, having sponsored women, having been super active in Alcoholics Anonymous, I still felt so damaged from all the things that had been done to me and that I participated in when I was drinking. I felt that because my mother is a murderer, right, and a pedophile, I felt that no one would actually ever welcome me into their family. These are things that were on my fear inventory, not as a newcomer, but at 9 years sober. And if I don't take an honest look at this, what's going to happen is I'm only going to choose relationships that will treat me that way. And I'll think, but she's so hot. Even though you talked to her, she cheated on like her last 18 girlfriends, but my case is going to be different. Right? So what I have to do, because this isn't about them, this is about me. I have to, if in step three I was reborn, why have I not acknowledged and embraced that I have been healed? So I have to list all these fears. What are these fears? Why do I have them? And then, because we want to get into the solution, I'm now going to ask myself, what would it look like if I were spirit reliant? That is what I call a power greater than myself, right? So when I am doing a fear inventory, when I take people that I sponsor through a fear inventory, I want you to give all your fears, put any fear you have, put it down on paper, and then I want you to ask yourself, what would this same fear look like if you were spirit reliant? Because I have to start healing now. I have to remember there's another side to it. The disease centers in my mind. Because then I'm going to pray and I'm going to ask Spirit to remove these fears. And it says at once, I commence to outgrow it. I can't outgrow it if I'm not willing to get honest with it. What is my core belief about love? And that means that you're going to have to do some layered writing when you're really getting into a thorough inventory, right? I feel that I'll never be loved. Well, what does love look like? I have to get clear as to what my conception is, and then I have to redefine it in order to heal it so that I can attract, so that I can become something different and attract something different, right? And then I'm going to go into the sex inventory, and the only reason I am doing this in the time frame that I am is because we only have a certain amount of time for me to cover this and open it up to questions and give Samantha some time as well. So the sex inventory... That's really like a two-hour workshop, isn't it? It really is. But we're going to try and condense it. They've asked me to be mindful. You know, so sex inventory is powerful, and a lot of people go out behind it. You hear things like, I just love this section right here. These are my peeps. It's my buddies, my homies. And so, you know, you hear a lot of, oh, he must be taping. I love you. You know, I hear a lot of, I went out behind my breakup. No. When I wanted to drink, right, after having come through that relationship and then 6 days later jumping into another relationship with someone who was in a relationship, right, asking her to drink with me because I didn't want to be here anymore, her saying, yes, she would drink with me, but we didn't have any alcohol or anything in the house, so we didn't have to change our dates, right? And then ending that relationship, she drank, but I just went to someone else, laid up with her for a little bit, dragged her through the mud, ended that relationship. When I got through with all that and I felt dirty and filthy at 9 years sober and didn't want to be touched, when I felt like I did when I had been on those streets, I got ready to do another sex inventory and that fear inventory, right? And so I started looking at why I wanted to drink. I didn't want to drink behind that relationship. I wanted to drink as a direct result of my behaviors in that relationship. I wanted to drink because I was so disappointed with myself for having stayed in a relationship that did not honor the woman that I am. Because what I'm saying, when I participate in any behavior in a friendship where your friends, you can never count on them, they're never there, they're always lying to you, you can't trust them. When I stay in those relationships, I'm saying that that's all I deserve. I'm saying that's as good as it's ever going to get. I'm saying that that's it for me. I don't deserve anything more. So I have to start looking at this. So let's look at it. It says that I'm not the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. If you want to be a swinger, swing on. You know what I mean? Get a vine for me because I can't roll like that anymore. Right? But if you can handle it, work it out. Right? So it says that I reviewed my own conduct over the years past. I want us to get clear that a sex inventory is not just people you've had intercourse with. Don't sell yourself short. It's like, well, I didn't sleep with them. An emotional affair is sometimes way powerful than someone you've actually touched. The fact that you're not present for your partner, that you're always fantasizing about this person, you're short-tempered with the person that really does love you, that really is giving you honor. I used to do in-the-meantime relationships, right? You're not really the one I want. I really want this person, but they're not giving me the time of day. So in the meantime, we're going to make it work. How dishonorable is that? I want to be treated like a lady, but I won't let go of broad behavior. So it says that I'm looking at my conduct over the years past, and I need to ask myself, where have I been selfish? Where have I been dishonest, inconsiderate? Where have I just not cared about your feelings? That me deceiving you is going to sour you moving forward. You're going to think that this is what love looks like when really it's just a woman lost and damaged. It's not what love looks like. It isn't where everyone does it. No, everyone doesn't do it. When my partner and I used to beat the crap out of each other, I'm like, well, everyone does it. They don't talk about it. No, they don't. So it says, whom had I hurt, right? This isn't, we're already looking at the people that I'm directly involved with, right? That I've been selfish, inconsiderate. I just haven't thought about you. It's all about me. You know, when my girlfriend and I were together, my ex-fiance, she had children, you know, and I have expensive taste. So when you have children and a girlfriend that has expensive taste, that has a job but squanders all her money, that's not always a good combination because I'm not thinking of what the kids need. I'm thinking I need a new Coach bag, a bigger one. The other one's too small. And if you really loved me, right? Selfish. It's not about a family. The traditions also have to come into any relationship for it to be successful. Our common welfare comes first, not my welfare. That's a woman that still, I have to get mine. If I don't get mine, I'm not going to get anything. That mentality has to be abandoned. right? It's what can I bring? What can I bring? How can I heal? How can we celebrate? How can we become a union? What does that look like? So whom had I hurt? This is not just me hurting you directly. It's who has been hurt as a result of you being hurt? Who is being hurt as a result of my friends losing sleep, having to come over to my house at midnight because they were afraid I was going to drink? Calling people at 4 in the morning, I would call my friend Tim and just start sobbing. He would say, "Oh, Candace, is that you? Hold on, let me get my coffee." Because I was so broken and I wanted to drink, and all I could do was grab my big book and grab my phone. I also have the type of friends that pick up their phone at 4:30 in the morning. So it says, did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? I did. I have to. When I'm insecure, I have to make you prove your love for me. I have to do it. I have to do it. Right? And so when I start looking at all this, you know, where was I at fault by doing these behaviors? And I got to get clear as to what the fault is. But then, here's what I really love. It says, what should I have done instead? That is magical. That is powerful. Right? Because that's, I'm in the mud. I'm feeling all dirty. Then they come with the shower. They're like, come on, Candace, we got the shower. Hot water, girl. Hot water. And that pretty smelling soap, too. Right? That's what could I have done different is. It means that I'm going to be in this predicament again, but I have the opportunity to take a different street now. What could I have done differently? I used to think when people were in relationships and their partner would flirt with me after they were out of the room, I thought it was because I was just so cute. I was just so hot. I didn't understand that they lacked integrity, that they had no respect, that they felt inadequate. Right? Because when you feel good about yourself, if I'm in a relationship with Samantha, I'm not going to disrespect her and embarrass her by hitting on someone else when she leaves the room. Only people who don't feel good about themselves take those actions. And only a woman who has low self-esteem or a man will accept that. If you can't talk to me up front in front of everyone, you need to keep moving. Candace doesn't live there anymore, right? So it's asking me, what could I have done differently? Because it knows I'm going to be here. And when I'm writing this, I got to get really specific. What does that look like? What does me doing something different look like? Because after I start doing all of this, I'm going to start shaping a sound and sane ideal for my sex relations. Here's the difference at me doing it when I was newly sober and I didn't understand the value and the importance. When I did it when I was newly sober, you know, I wanted her to be fine, a freak, have money. That's it. Oh, and a good sense of humor, right? So as I stayed sober and I started it, Clancy told me two things when I came to him. He is like so radical. He said, I want you to keep your hands to yourself and pay your own bills. What? 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 You know what I'm trying to find? Is that in the book? Is that in the book? You know what I mean? When you're not ready to surrender, you'll pull that moment. Is that in the book? You know. I'm sure it is, sugar. It's called self-esteem, right? And so what? But because I was so badly mangled as a direct result of my behaviors, my conduct sober, I became willing to follow that, right? So I had to understand why I felt the need to hit. When I feel overwhelmed, when I feel not safe, when I feel threatened, the only way that I can get some act right is I have to physically lay hands on you. That's not how I want to live. That's how my family lives. I'm not my family. My disease is telling me that's still my truth. It is not my truth. Right? So I'm almost 8 years away from picking my hand up. I don't do it under any circumstances. And I don't date people who do. It is a deal breaker. I say that again. It's a deal breaker. Right? I don't date anyone whom I can't trust. I'm not going to try and mold you. If I don't trust you off the bat, it's like, well, you know, we're working on it. No, 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 no. I deserve to be safe. I deserve to be happy. I deserve love. I used to think that love was paranoia, violence, infidelity, right? That's just judging. I didn't know that that's what I thought, but judging by all my past relationships, which all those elements were present, that's what I thought. But when I started to shape a sound and sane ideal, here's what I look for in a partner today. A partner that has integrity, a partner that is charitable, that's supportive, that's compassionate, that's honest, and a freak, because I have to have some things. They can't go, right? You know. But that's my truth. That doesn't have to be your truth, right? And so it says, we subjected each relation to this test. Is it selfish or not? Let me give you an idea when you say, is it selfish? It's like, well, how would I know? Are we both in agreement? Not have you manipulated your partner into getting an outcome. Are we both in agreement? Our common welfare comes first. When I started listing all those ideals, what I then had to do is become those ideals. I did not date until everything I was asking, you know, I want a woman who can buy me a house, then get in a position to buy your own house. My life today looks very different. There's nothing you can do for me that I can't do for myself. So you're not going to complete me. You're going to complement who I already am. When I arrive at that place, the way I approach any relationship is going to be, it's going to be just a world apart from anything I could have ever imagined. Until I was willing to honestly do this, I didn't know that I could feel this way about me and that it would change the way I felt about you. That I don't have to condemn you for who you are and how you live. I get to celebrate who I am, and I get to find someone, friend or otherwise, that connects with that truth. So when I list my ideals, then I have to ask myself, am I everything that I am looking for in you? If I am not, let me first work on that. And any relationship I have where I can't bring spirit in, I don't want to be a part of. Any relationship I have where I can't celebrate with spirit, I don't want to be a part of. That's my truth, right? I was at a sex store, and it's a sex inventory I could talk about. I was at a sex store because when I travel, I take a relaxation object with me. And and TSA felt the need to relax as well. So when I unpacked my things, it wasn't there. And I promptly wrote them a letter, but that's another story. Anyway, I wrote them a letter, told them what they needed to reimburse. But so I went to the pleasure chest, you know. And so a song came on that I guess was like a song about God, right? And one of the people there ran up and she says, oh, we can't have this song playing. People aren't going to want to hear this when they're buying sex toys. And so I had to think about that. Because when you say something, I don't want to go, oh, yeah, yeah. I hate people who always go, oh, yeah. No, no. I had to ask myself, is that my truth? You know what? That's not my truth. I can bring God to the pleasure chest. Because anything I do, I'm not going to take this whatever I get to someone that belongs to someone else. It's going to be a sacred moment. However we get down, whatever position we in, it's sacred and it is blessed. I don't do things that I have to hide today. There is no shame in my life. There is only beauty. There is only healing. I am not my mother. I am not my dad, who was a pimp for many years. I am a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous that is driven by principles. I have had some experiences, but they are not my truth. I had to redefine what does love look like, what does family look like, what does healing look like, what does support look like, what does loyalty look like. I did the definition in the big book, and then I wrote the definition in Candace's own words. And then I talked to people who had a life that I wanted, and I asked them what it looked like for them. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Candace, and thank you for asking me to be part of this with you. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I came here, and I was sitting way in the back somewhere. You did this, not this workshop, but another workshop, and I always really like hearing you. And I didn't have a voice then because I had just come in, and I was terrified. But anyway, my experience very quickly with this is when I first came in and I went through the steps, my sobriety date is September 23rd, 2007, I've had many sobriety dates, but that is hopefully the last one. And when I did my first fourth step in here this time, I didn't have a relationship with a higher power, really. I had a belief and I had an awareness, but I didn't have a relationship. And I really feel like I don't know how I can't do this alone. I can't get into my resentments by myself without a relationship with some sort of higher power. It's too scary for me to face myself. So now, having built a relationship with a higher power in steps two and steps three and step three, now I'm ready to commence with step four. And I just wanted to read this little part of the fourth step paragraph real quick about resentments, which I'm sure you've all heard, but it's worth reading again. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, and then we set our resentments on paper, and that's the columns part in the big book that we do our fourth step. So I'm going through the steps again, but in the meantime, my number one resentment of my whole life is with my mother. Shocking. I'm sure no one else has that. And it set the stage, I know it has, for relationships that I've had mostly with women, where I haven't been able to be available in relationships because I'm terrified, because my mother abandoned me and blah, 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 whatever it is she did. So recently I had an experience where I had to go through a huge deal with my family, and my mother did another huge thing which re-triggered all the resentment that I thought that I'd let go of. And my sponsor, who is TC, sent me back to the fourth step, and she had me do an inventory on my mother. And this time around, going into it with a higher power, I didn't, like, the first time I kind of raced through it. I wrote the columns, you know, I wrote what it affected, which is really important, because before, when you did something to me, I was just pissed. That's it. That's all I knew was pissed. I didn't even know hurt at that point. But I had to really look at what did she affect? What did she do? What did she affect? And then I had to look at, you know, my part. Where had I been dishonest? Where had I been? I couldn't imagine. I just could never figure out what my part could possibly be. This is my mother. She's supposed to do everything right. She's supposed to take care of me. But I'm a grown-up now. So I really paused in the last column when I looked at my part this time, and I just looked at the blank column until I had something real, until something really came from within me. I didn't just fill the column, because the last time I did this, I remember going, oh, I don't know, I guess I was bitchy, I was this, you know, because I just wanted to fill up the stuff so my sponsor could help me figure it out. And that's not what this is. Like, I need to go deep, because my problems are deep, and my problems are of my own making. So I have to go in there, and I have to take a real inventory. And so for the first time, I went back, and I really looked at what my part was with my mom, and a lot of it was just my refusal to tell her, to speak up, to have a voice with her, to say, you know, I'm hurt, to say, you know, I don't think this is right, to, you know, instead of expecting her to figure it out, or just standing up for me, just being, having a voice. I just talked about sitting in the back of the room and not even being able to acknowledge Candace because I was so scared because I didn't have a voice before. This part of the fourth step has given me back that voice, because I get to say, well, this is my part, and in taking my part, I get to have a voice again, you know, and I get to have self-respect, you know, and it's amazing. But I have to get that relationship with a higher power first, because I don't know how to navigate that world unless I do it with spiritual guidance, you know. And it's not some big mystery, you know, like everybody's higher power is different, and, you know, however you get there, it's through the steps, but you know, your own concept of a higher power, but it has gotten me free. So if you're here in this workshop and you chose this workshop, congratulations, because this is not the lightweight workshop. you know, it's great that you're here, because this is an intense step, you know. So, you know, that's all I really have to say, and I just wanted to share All right, so now, what time is it? We take questions.
Q&A.
Huh? Dieter.
Hi, I'm Kit Dieter, I'm an alcoholic. I have a question for both of you, actually, or whoever wants to answer it. What do you do when, like for me, for instance, on my fourth step, two parts, on my fourth step in my resentment section, I've had for pretty much the last 20 years the exact same person in the exact same every time I feel like something like this is gone and it's not on my fourth step anymore, I find myself like I am right now in the middle of a fourth step and it's the first person on the list again. And it's the exact same things. Any suggestions on how to kind of let go and move on and really discard?
The question is, what do you do when you have a resentment and it's a reoccurring resentment? When you've gone through all the columns, you've seen your part, you've made amends for your participation in whatever that situation was, yet that resentment comes back. It's been my experience. I have that with my mother. What she's done is hard to deal with. And it always comes down to me forgiving her, surrendering one more time, and finding out what I can do to take the energy that I feel she can't provide and give it to this universe in a healing way. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but that is a resentment that has come up for me every time I have done an inventory. You know, I am pissed off that my mother would rape a child, period. Then that she would kill that child, and then that she would take that child's body apart. That's hard. And so I have to continuously understand that that is not my truth, and if I don't heal, I will attract that energy into my life. Here's what I have to ask, and something that you can ask yourself, get with your sponsor, and put pen to paper. What do you need from this person to let them off the hook? What do you need to let them off the hook? Because my mom is sick. She can't do anything more than what you have to be sick to do that. So what do I need? It was my friend Jan that said, do you wish that you could have a mother-daughter relationship with her? I said, no. Yes. That's what it was. And when I got with that, I stopped putting her on the list.
Thanks. I think she said it. I think it's getting to acceptance of that part of it, you know. Forgiveness, acceptance, but I don't have anything better to say than what you just said.
I've always done resentments first and then like the sex and fear in either order. Do you have experience in an order that you think that they would be good to go through?
I mean, I just do it like the book says it to do it, exactly like the book, which is, yeah, which is resentments and then, and yeah. That's all I can say. That's all I have done.
What would you say for someone that's going through the fourth step for probably the first time, while I'm going through it really the first time, as thoroughly as I'm going through it? I'm scared to death of feelings, but I'm more scared of going out and, you know, drinking and getting wet again. I have a pretty good vocabulary, but I don't have the vocabulary a lot of times to be like, well, this is why I'm angry. You know, this is, I know I feel it, and I feel it sitting there writing, and sometimes I can get about four lines down, and that's where I'm at now. I get about four lines in, and, you know, I'm just like, what is this? You know, and I can sit with it so long, and it's just like the words don't come to put on that piece of paper to get it out. You know, and it's just so frustrating, and it's so just debilitating. You know, what question do you ask yourself to get deeper and diagram that?
Okay, the question is, for someone who's going through an inventory for the first time, or anyone who's going through an inventory, it's normally difficult when you have to put pen to paper. So what do you do to be as thorough as possible, especially when you feel stuck? There are a couple of things. I pray before doing any inventory. The set-aside prayer is immensely helpful. As well as just writing out a short prayer, you know, Spirit, I ask that you remove anything and everything that's blocking me. Let me not be afraid to see my truth so that I can see your truth for me, right? Because my truth and Spirit's truth for me are very different. And that's the process of the steps, is to reconcile them. When I'm taking someone through inventory, they have a timeline. I don't believe in allowing people to be on inventory 7 months and 9 months, and you're just walking around in mud for all that time. It says, I launched into a course of vigorous action, right? This isn't about allowing people to stay sick. Someone who loves me won't allow me to stay sick. right? So I want to make sure that when the feelings are coming up, you said that you had a vocabulary. This is not a program about your vocabulary. This is a program about these feelings and how they're dominating our lives. So whatever it is, I feel pissed off. What's going on is you're getting afraid of how you feel. You're getting afraid to put that truth down on paper. You feel as if maybe you might be punished or if you don't deserve to feel those feelings, but you do. So I want you to let all that stuff come through your mind and then write it anyway. Write it anyway and give yourself a timeline. Every day you're going to spend X amount of time doing your inventory. Say, I'm going to honor myself today. It's very important how we speak to ourselves, right? When I'm trying to get with someone, baby, you look so good. Ooh, I love how that suit makes you look, right? But when I start talking to me, and you're so stupid, I can't believe you would do that. Like, I can't. One, I no longer speak to myself that way, but we have to be really mindful of how we are addressing ourselves. Sometimes you can be so light and your light so strong that it will scare someone who is still in the dark. So what we then have to do is to try and channel that so that we can then bring them with us. Right? Someone who hasn't, like Samantha was saying, found their voice. You're finding your voice. You know what I mean? And if you need to, I would start singing. Me, 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 me. You know what I mean? I would do that. I would get corny. I would have fun with it. Just remember that what you're writing is not your present. It's not your truth. You no longer are that person. That's why we go to meetings consistently. That's why we have commitments. Because we are no longer that individual. We just need to get something sorted out. We're just getting it sorted out. You know what I mean? I hope that helps you. You had a question?
Yeah, I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kelly.
I'm going to ask if you're ready to go into another inventory. And I remember the first time I went to an inventory. You know, I hear people talk about this freedom. Well, I don't remember really feeling free when I went to that first inventory. And I guess what my question is, have you ever been through an inventory where you felt, you heard people talk about the freedom, but you just didn't really quite feel that? And if you went through the inventory the second time, did you feel the freedom that they talked about?
I'm going to answer it, and I'm going to let Samantha answer it. The question is, have you ever gone through an inventory and not felt free after you were done? I didn't feel free after my inventory, but I felt a sense of purpose. I felt as if I had a purpose here on this planet. I felt that I was a bona fide member of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Taking a look at all the crap I've done and the defects of character that have contributed to it gives me some more integrity now because I can see what's real, what's not. I've shared it with someone, my sponsor. They've shared back with me, letting me know I'm not the only one that's ever lived like this. Right? My case is not different. That's why we share it, getting some humility and getting some integrity. But the freedom for me came in step 9. Now that I've understood all this crap that I've done and I've gotten honest about it, I need to be woman enough to step in my shoes and go face the people that I have harmed. This stuff that I'm putting down there, where have I been selfish, inconsiderate? These fears, how these fears drove me to take someone else's respect and dignity? I need to be woman enough to go and face them. That's how I get free. So, no, freedom is not supposed to be about the 4th step because it ain't the 12th step. Know what I mean? But it's definitely giving you your arsenal is now there. You're lighter. You're not carrying stuff that no longer is yours. And what is yours, you're going to make that right. You're going to put that in the washing machine with that pretty smelling fabric softener.
I would just say it's not a measure, how free you feel is not a measure of how well you've done it, I don't think. I mean, for me, it hasn't been. I think that I feel like I was on the road to freedom when I finished. That's how I felt. Like, I felt like, you know, I was at the beginning of freedom. I was willing to keep moving forward when I went through this. I've done it a couple of times, I just felt like I was on the road to freedom. I didn't feel this huge sense of, like, lifting off my shoulders yet, but I felt like I was part of the program, like I was willing to do what I could do. And I would also just say, you know, I'm either very lazy or I'm super hard on myself, you know? So I had to find a balance with this, too, at a certain point. So yeah, that's it.
Tawny?
Hi, Tawny Alcoholic.
Hey, Tawny.
My question is when you came to terms with my found, sane ideal of my future sex life. That's huge in the sex inventory.
It's huge.
Huge. And that, when I remember, that was the last piece for me. And then it was, how can I better cooperate with God? So what was your experience, and how has that enhanced your relationship with God if she has not shown up yet?
Okay.
Clear on what that ideal looks like.
I just got excited. Y'all saw me get excited. Because, you know, when you give an hour to such hardcore subjects, I am much more in depth when I'm doing an actual workshop on the sex inventory. But I cannot because time does not permit. But I'm so glad we can revisit this right here. So here's the thing about if I'm going to list my ideals, right, and I'm going to do the work to grow towards them, I really have to now hold myself accountable. What would happen is I would list these ideals. Let's say I have 10 things. I meet someone, she has 2. I would say, you know what, 2 is a good number. Let's move. We could build on that. No, we can't. Because here's what's going. Water seeks its own level. I will no longer shrink so that I fit into someone else's reality. I get to celebrate me, and when I'm afraid to really request what it is I want, I am not spirit reliant. I'm saying I have done all this work to become the person that I would want to date, but I'm going to keep settling. No, here's what I do. A friend of mine talked about, she told me this years ago, I wasn't ready to hear it. She talked about the 90-day wait before engaging in physical intimacy. And when she started talking to me about it, I just couldn't understand her. It was like she was speaking tongues. I was like, what happened? What? You know, because in 90 days, my relationships are over. We're done. Thank you. Come again. You know. And so now, but let me tell you something. You know, we can laugh about it, but it's painful. It's painful to, one, have had these many people touching you. Right? To have a track record that doesn't look successful. It doesn't matter if I say I'm leaving them and blah, blah, blah. I know it's fear. Mm-hmm. Right? So when I started looking at the ideals list, 90 days, the first 30 days, I'm not even holding your hand because we've already agreed that we're dating. I only do exclusive. I don't do open dating. I don't do date you, date 5 other people. Right? And that's just my truth. I'm not the arbiter of how you get down, okay? So for the first 30 days, that's what we're doing. And the second 30 days, we're having fun. We are looking at our alignment. We're holding hands. We're courting. I love being courted. Since I've been reborn, I get to be courted. I didn't think a recovering prostitute got to be courted. But in the fear inventory, when I started looking at what my life would look like if I didn't have those fears, I realized I've recovered. I'm not that woman. Right? And so now, in the last 30 days, I'm looking at where our value systems are. Do we have a spiritual alignment? Here's what I found out. You may identify. I slept with people and I knew their names, but they were strangers. They were strangers. We didn't have a future together. It was not possible. We were not spiritually aligned. Our value system was different. And when I got clear as to who I was, so my relationships have been better. I believe she's worth waiting for. I had a crush recently on someone, and she has all the things I want on my list, right? Because I have all the things I want on my list. And I talked to her, but we didn't have any chemistry. There was just nothing there. And it was okay. It was all right, because you know what that means? She's closer now,
yeah.
Right? It's coming because it's so healthy, and the person that I like, she's so healthy. She has integrity. She's dependable. She has my back. She's a friend. I can't date someone who I couldn't be friends with. I never dated people who I wanted to be friends with. My friend said, why do you call the women you date chicks and broads, but you don't call your friends that? And I said, because I respect my friends. So one, I don't address any woman like that at all, but I had to take a look at that. Why would I lay down with someone that I felt so little for, right? Everything I do is a celebration. Everything I do is sacred. I have been reborn. My body is sacred. You guys, our time is up, but I really hope that this has helped someone, and I'm available if anyone needs to talk. Thank you so much.